You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, welcome to Built for the Stage podcast. This is Joe Roscoe, founder of Built for the Stage, Broadway's number one fitness platform. If you want to try a free trial, go to the website builtforthestage.com or click the link in the description of this episode and you can work for 7 days with your own Broadway fitness coach on an online app. So check it out. No catch, no gimmicks. BuiltForTheStage.com. If you like Built for the Stage podcast, please rate, subscribe, and leave a comment. It'd be greatly appreciated. All right, please enjoy this conversation. Okay, Barbara Jo.
Yeah.
First off, I played this game with one of my first guests on the podcast. Let's play the how do you say your last name game. I'm going to start, though.
Okay.
So you're in the holding room ready to audition.
Yes.
And the monitor is going through the headshots to say who's next. And they say, Barbara Jo Bednarczyk.
Yeah, something along those lines. Right? Yeah, or they just stop after Barbara Jo. And I'm like, that's me. Yep, thank you.
Barbara, yeah, you do have an out there because your first name is very unique.
Yeah, that works.
There's probably not any other Barbara Jos in the room. So.
Definitely not my age, at least.
Exactly. Yeah. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
So can you let us know?
Bednarczyk. Yeah.
Okay, there it is.
Not Barbara so scary.
Jo Bednarczyk. Yeah. Just take that C out of there.
Exactly.
Don't let it confuse you.
That's it.
And go from there. So Barbara Jo is from Zanesville, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
We just had our workout session
where
Barbara Jo was rocking out to Welcome to the Jungle.
True story.
Because I'm such a brilliant DJ.
Yeah.
And trainer, but mostly a DJ. So she's from Zanesville, Ohio, and we just, you know, the theater world is small, but wow, we made it really small with a couple of our connections there.
Yeah, it got real small real quick.
And we're actually the same age.
Exact same age.
We graduated high school at the same time.
Same year.
And we were doing a little sound check just now, and we were talking about how my high school mascot was a cardinal. And she was like, you know what, that's kind of normal. My mascot was also a cardinal.
Yeah,
right?
in college. Yep,
at Otterbein.
At Otterbein, yeah.
So let's just make it even crazier. We'll spare the other details of
for sure.
The other connections that we made, just because you guys out there don't care. But not only did we graduate high school at the same time, but I also was accepted into the Otterbein musical theater program, and we could have been classmates.
Want me to blow your mind even further?
Yeah.
I wasn't accepted into the theater program that first year.
Okay.
That first year. Actually, I didn't even audition for that first year. And I only went to Otterbein because I got a lot of scholarship to go there.
Mm.
And then my voice teacher happened to be her very first year teaching it in the program. And I just happened to get her. And she was like, what kind of music do you like to sing? And I was like, oh, I love musical theater. And she was like, well, do you want to be in the program? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. She said, okay, let's get you ready to audition. So I auditioned during my actual freshman year and got waitlisted for the program for my sophomore year and found out about a week before I went back for my second year that I got into the program.
Oh, wow. A week before. How exciting.
It was very exciting. It was a little bit stressful, but I guess it kind of like set me up for the rest of like what this career was like.
Yeah.
So it worked out. It worked out. Yeah.
Did you keep your original major?
My original major was undeclared with a history minor and a music minor.
Perfect.
So I still took it was a liberal arts school, so we had to take lots of other classes anyway. So I still took a lot of history classes, majored though in musical theater, minored in dance.
Mm-hmm.
So it all worked out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, almost. The world's almost
That's
collided.
That's so crazy.
Man.
Now they've collided though.
Yeah. Now, hey.
That's all that matters.
It was, from all the connections, it was just destined.
Truly.
It was destined to happen.
Yeah.
So I just saw you in My Fair Lady about a week or so ago.
Yeah.
At the Lincoln Center, my favorite place. Wow, you're lucky.
Wow, I am lucky. I'm real lucky.
Tell me what it is, how it is to do a show there. Tell me.
Well, to be perfectly honest, I had never seen a show at Lincoln Center until I had an audition for My Fair Lady as a replacement and went to see the show before I auditioned for it. Mm-hmm. And I was just taken aback, even sitting in the house. It is such a beautiful space. It's kind of like an oasis in Manhattan of just like art and culture, and that makes it really special. But the actual theater, the Vivian Beaumont, is huge. it is huge. It is the biggest stage I've ever had the pleasure of performing on. And to be able to watch the show and then to be a part of it was pretty awesome. But it's really nice to be in such a new facility, relatively speaking, compared to the other Broadway houses here in the city. Yeah, it's pretty dreamy. I'm not going to lie.
My first show I ever saw, and my still favorite to this day, was The Light in the Piazza.
So good.
So every time I go back, it you know, it brings me back to that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I was like 17 or something at the time. So, yeah.
So good.
The Lincoln Center. I was sitting behind and to the left of a man who was just glowing the entire time. I mean, he was beyond captivated. he was the child, just like mesmerized. Aww. And it was so true and like genuine. It like it almost was a second show for me.
Absolutely.
Like I was like, wait, I gotta keep watching
the actual show.
But it just was like really heartwarming. Aww. Looking at this guy. And I've seen a lot of theater this year and last year, just with Built for the Stage and clients and whatnot. My Fair Lady is definitely one of my favorites I've seen. It was magnificent. So congrats on that.
Thank you.
It's elegant.
It is.
It's refined.
It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. And the story that we tell is pretty timely, even though it's very, very old tale.
Yeah. Don't you love that?
I do.
When that happens.
Very much. Yeah. Very much. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also like, it's raw though. It has some grit.
There's
a lot of comedic.
It's very funny. Mm-hmm. There are moments. Yeah, you need the relief from like the serious story that's going on, and the transformation that happens not only on stage but kind of in sharing the story with the rest of the audience. There's just a full circle moment that happens by the end of the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's real. It's real special.
Before we jump into it.
Yeah.
So we did your last name.
Yeah.
Your first name, Barbara Jo. So where I did end up studying musical theater for a few reasons was Coastal Carolina, which is in South Carolina.
Yes, it is.
Okay, there you go.
Beautiful.
Very Southern name, Barbara
Very,
Jo.
Very Southern.
Is there some type of like significance behind you being named Barbara Jo?
Barbara Jo. My first name is after one of my mom's friends when she was younger. And my mom has two names. She's Mary Jane. And my Nana, my mom's mom, was Eleanor Joanne, but she went by Joanne. So it's like the two-name thing was a thing, and a lot of people still call me Barbara Jo. Anything but Barb, really.
Just don't call me
Just
Barb.
Just do not do that. If you call me Barb, we're not friends anymore. No, Barbara Jo, it suits me.
You have a dog, Murph.
Murph, yes.
I love dogs.
Murph is pretty great.
I'm all about dogs, so I had to bring up Murph.
Murph lives in Ohio because he is not a city dog. Yeah. I know, it's very upsetting. He lives in Ohio with my parents. Mm-hmm. But when they got him, I was on a break in between show contracts and was home for 3 months in Ohio because it was like over the holidays and everything. And so I basically had him grow up from like very much puppy stage to like almost a full dog stage in those 3 months. And I literally hung out at home with him all day and worked out. Like that's all I was doing. And so he still,
you're talking my language.
I know, it doesn't seem very awful.
Working out,
That's what I did. I would do just dog time and then I would go take Legree classes and then I would come back and do more dog time. And so he's still now when I go home to visit or when I FaceTime or anytime he hears my voice, he like comes bounding into the room. Mm-hmm. And when I step out of a car, like in my parents' driveway, he knows who I am immediately and like wants to play. With other people, he's pretty reserved and can behave himself. But with me, it's like, oh, my sibling's back. The playmate's here. Like, let's go. Mm-hmm. And he's just dream, and I get to see him real soon. I'm real excited about that.
Cool.
Yeah, he's the best.
Very nice.
He's the best.
So growing up in Ohio, you've been dancing since you were two? Or?
A babe. I started taking dance lessons in my hometown. I saw the Nutcracker, I think it was on TV or VHS recording of it or something, and I convinced my mom that I wanted to be a ballerina. Because like every two-year-old wants to be a ballerina. And so she started me in dance lessons even though I was too little technically and begged the teacher to let me take. And if I didn't behave in class, then she would pull me out. But I was like so invested and started taking lessons then and then moved to a studio in Westerville, Ohio, about an hour away from my hometown when I was in kindergarten and stayed there until I graduated from high school, and then taught there when I was in college. So yeah, there you go. Worked out.
What is the dance studio's name?
Straub Dance Center in Westerville, Ohio.
There you go. Shout out to
yeah,
all.
Susie and Carol and the whole gang. They're fabulous. Go. Yeah, they came to see me in the show a few weeks ago.
Did they?
Yes, and
man,
it was
they must
magical.
Been proud. Yeah, they must
it was
been
magical.
So
that
proud.
Was a real magical night for sure.
Cool.
For sure.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So growing up, mm-hmm. you're dancing.
Dancing
you're,
a lot.
You're just enjoying that.
Yeah.
Not even hobby, but probably a passion or a love at that time.
Definite
you're
passion.
Definitely hang on to it.
For sure.
Watching the show,
yeah.
the character Eliza Doolittle,
yeah.
it's a character that young girls or girls in the audience, anyone really, but mm-hmm. young girls in the audience can look up to, can
for
see
sure.
her staying within herself as she aspires to better herself at the same time,
mm-hmm.
but still staying true to who that is.
Yeah.
Did you have any like heroes like that growing up? Like who did you look up to when you were growing up?
Well, when I was little, when I started the dance studio, when I was five, with Susie was one of my first teachers, and I had no friends there, and most of the kids in my class were like coming from the same schools and knew each other, and she came over to me and she said, "Barbara Jo is an awfully big name for such a little girl. Can I call you Barbie Jo?" And I like was like, yes. And from that moment on, for her to like take the time to make me feel so special when I felt like such an outsider at such a young age, but doing what I wanted to do and what I love to do, just her creating that space for me to be who I was and to be welcome felt so wonderful. And she's that kind of person for everyone. And I mean, I just saw her a couple weeks ago. And she's still that person, and now she has young adult children, and it's wild to me. But I would say she definitely was one of those people who, through thick and thin, has stuck to her guns and done what she believed to be right and spoke up for anyone who she believed was being wronged and did so with such grace and such love and humility and humanity. And I think, yeah. So she's kind of been that person for me. And my mom as well. Holy cow.
Yeah.
She's a great lady. Yeah, yeah. And talk about, you know, sticking to her guns and understanding that, you know, the popular opinion might not be what you should be going along with, and that sticking up for your family is so important, and prioritizing what really is important to you in life and being true to that. Yeah.
How did your family react when you told them, "Hey, I'm in my first year at Otterbein. I'm still not sure, but I think I'm going to try to do the musical theater program and become a performer."
Yeah.
How was their reaction?
I mean, they knew that's what I love to do. I actually had auditioned at multiple schools going into my freshman year and got in nowhere. I wasn't even waitlisted anywhere. I just got flat out no's from everywhere. And that was crushing to me. For sure, because it's something that I wanted so badly. And I thought, like, maybe I just shouldn't go to school. Maybe I should just go to New York. Like, that's maybe what I should do. But it's like, no, the education route's super important to me. And I had gotten really great scholarships to a couple different schools. And I chose the one that still had a musical theater program, but I knew was still highly competitive. And went there anyway. And then I auditioned my freshman year and was waitlisted and got in a week before my second year began.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah.
And the rest is history.
Yeah, something like that.
But it probably still wasn't, once you got in, it probably wasn't butterflies and rainbows, right?
Definitely not. So, no. Not
yeah.
at all. Not at all.
Tell us about some of those struggles or some of those,
yeah.
you know, life lessons or journeys
yeah,
that you took.
Yeah, for sure. So I was fortunate enough that my school was on the quarter system. So we had three quarters. Yeah, I remember those before, like, semesters. I think everything switched over to those now. But yeah, so we had like fall, quarter, winter, and spring. And once I got into the theater program, I was cast every quarter in a show. But I was never the lead in any show. I was always in the ensemble and in the dance concert. And I had two like actual speaking roles. Once I was Tiger Lily in Peter Pan, and then I was May in The Wild Party, and that was my senior year. And every other time I was just in the ensemble. just, I say just in the ensemble, and here I'm making a career out of it, so please don't say that in the wrong way. I was only cast in the ensemble. I was never given lead roles.
It's different, though. You're in your school, and you're competing against, you know, whatever, 20, yeah. 60 people, yeah. Whereas here you're on Broadway, you're competing against thousands and thousands.
Yeah.
So to be in the ensemble is to be the lead, in a sense, meaning
sure.
like to be
sure.
cast
it just,
in a Broadway
it
show.
Felt, it felt different in that it felt like, especially when you're in school and you're getting into your older years of being in college, you kind of expect that to be the case. You're like, oh,
right.
I've paid my dues
exactly,
in college.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've paid my college dues, and I feel like I'm entitled to this thing.
Yeah.
And truth is, you're not entitled to anything.
Yeah.
And it only caused me to work harder. Something I learned early on in my dance classes was a sense of respect and discipline. I knew to show up early, always, to any rehearsal. I knew to show up prepared, always. And I also knew rehearsal etiquette meant standing there or sitting there and being quiet, but being observant and being invested in the work that was happening and being done, because you might be called upon at any moment to participate. Mm-hmm. And even if you weren't in that particular scene, you could still learn from it. And so I took that with me through every rehearsal in college, and I just paid attention to everything, and I absorbed everything I possibly could because I was there to learn.
That's
and I learned a lot.
That's a perfect segue. Because in the show, you are in a cast with Laura Benanti, who
yes.
plays
Eliza
Doolittle. I actually saw her in The Wedding Singer.
And oh, I love that musical.
I love it as well.
If you don't know the music, you got to listen to it.
It's beyond
oh, it's so
fun.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Get Out of the Dumpster. Do you remember that one?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, man.
Song Pop. It's
right.
So good.
It's so
it's
good.
Like bubblegum 80s pop. It's so good, you guys. So
and
good.
Her friend pulls the lever
and the water.
Down
yeah, like a right flash dance moment.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
so
she actually, good. That character, she actually went up on stage during, I think it was towards the end of the act.
Uh-huh.
Did a take out to the audience. The audience was involved. She's cracking up. Then Laura breaks. The audience breaks. Everyone's laughing.
It's like life. It's real life.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
It was a true like live theater moment.
Totally.
So yeah, I saw her back in the day. And
yeah.
then she was also Louise and Gypsy.
Yes.
With Patti LuPone.
Yeah.
Who you also worked with.
I did.
And I got to see them in Gypsy as well.
So,
I was lucky in both accounts.
Yeah.
So on the topic of observing and learning, and what are some of the things that you've learned from those two women that have just made a huge career and name for themselves? You know, what was some of those memories or current ones going on right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the nice thing about having the like habitual presence of absorbing all things is that like I become this sponge for all of their little anecdotes and. So my head is full of them, but the best thing is that they stay true to the text, and they know that it's there for a reason, and everything you need to find is written for you if you're willing to delve into it and really just trust that it's there. Also that you have to be prepared. There's no other option. You walk into a rehearsal and you take care of your own self before you get there. The rehearsal is to figure out everything with everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have personal things that you need to memorize or need to sort out, you do that. And then you come to the table and you work with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very collaborative process. And I've definitely seen that through both of them. Also, they're very assertive and true to who they are as females, as mothers, as women, and they value the importance of family, and they value the importance of their work as well, but I think it's so important to find that balance, and they both really don't preach that, but just have shown me that it's possible,
they live
and I
it.
Think that's
yeah.
really important.
How
yeah.
do you find the balance?
Oh my gosh, I find the balance with spending time by myself.
I
really like to spend time alone. I need that time to decompress, especially in the city. You're around people all the time. You cannot walk out on the street and be alone. Like, there is nowhere to be alone except in your own apartment if you live by yourself.
It's not Zanesville, Ohio.
It's not Zanesville, Ohio. You don't have cows in your backyard. You can't just, like, scream and have no one hear you.
Right.
No, that's not the case. I like to cook. And for me, that is something that is very, like, it's, I guess, one of my love languages. Like, it's a very giving thing for me to provide food for other people. My mom's the same way. And I've figured that out in recent years. But like making sure that other people are fed, like, is very calming and fulfilling to me. And I live with my boyfriend, and like, since I'm not home typically at dinner time, I usually try to make food that can be eaten either at dinner time or when I get home after a show quickly. And I also like pack lunches, and like, I'm just that kind of a nurturing person. And that for me is a good balance. Mm-hmm. I practice yoga, which is good for me to like calm down for 5 minutes, because that's also difficult. There's so many people in our cast. We have, I think our cast has expanded because we have like vacation swings and all that. So we have about 40 people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You came out for, what's the big number with Eliza's dad?
Get me to the church on time.
Yes, get me to the church on time. So
it's like the big 11 o'clock number.
Yes, the iconic number, get me to the church on time.
For
that
sure.
I love with Frank Sinatra as well,
his
rendition of it. But
of
that number happens, and then all of a sudden, you guys come out of the woodwork, and you're like, wow, there's that many of you up
so
on
stage. So many
people
on stage.
Yeah, because you know, throughout the show, there's a group here, a group there,
right.
And then it kind of,
yeah, and
at
that
least for
scene,
my remembering, my memory comes together then where everyone.
For sure. That scene also, the reason you see so many people and it feels like, oh, wow, the whole stage is super, super full, is because it's only done on the thrust. We aren't utilizing the rest of the space in that particular moment. So when we utilize the rest of the space, we can spread people out. And there's big pieces of scenery, and it doesn't seem like such a crowd. But yeah, if you kind of put us all together, and we do things in unison in that number also, so I think that makes a huge difference. And we look like a little army. There's so many of us.
Tell us about what it's like to be in the ensemble of the show. What are some of the requirements? What's your day-to-day? How do you keep the show fresh?
Day-to-day.
Just whatever is on your mind about your experience.
About the experience. Well, I replaced an original cast member who went on to do the prom, which is also awesome. So I had the privilege of seeing the show before I auditioned for it. So I was able to see exactly what track I would be replacing. So that means the ensemble member, we call that our track, is all the different things that we do, that one person does during a show. And so I was able to follow her track and see like, oh, she is this person in this scene. She's a maid in this scene. Oh, she does this, she does that. So I was able to kind of see all of that before I even auditioned, which was awesome.
Yeah.
Any information you can have before you go into an audition is valuable. And so I went into the audition, and we did a fairly simple combination, but I knew that at one point this particular character plays a boy. And so in that dance combination, I was able to kind of use the mannerisms that I saw her use. Instead of being a girl, I was more like a boy. Great. And so that was beneficial to get into the show, first off. And then now that I'm in the show, I'm busy the whole time. It's like I have long enough in between scenes on stage to change my clothes, maybe take a sip of water, perhaps check Instagram, and then run back to the stage. And so to keep all of that going, like, I have a really great relationship with my dresser, Natalie. She's the best. And she makes sure everything is ready for me. And she even refills my water, which is, yeah, I know. It's like the little things. But I also, like, take care of myself in that I make sure I get a ton of sleep at night. And, like, for me, a ton of sleep is necessary. We're talking at least 9 hours, which for the normal person is like, what? You have 9 hours in your day that you can sleep? Now, mind you, life isn't too crazy right now. I'm just doing a show all the time. But like auditions and whatnot, I prioritize my sleep. I just do. And to keep the show fresh, oh gosh, there are lots of moments for improv and silliness that occurs. And we try to keep it to a minimum, the silliness. But backstage shenanigans are totally valid.
I read about some of those. Norbert,
What did you read? Oh, Norbert.
I was reading about Norbert. Yeah, you've worked with some great people. So Norbert Leo Butz, he liked to, I guess, dance backstage a lot while other numbers were going on.
Yeah, so he would dance and sing. Lots of people would sing, like, or we come up with different lyrics for some of the songs that are a little silly.
Yeah.
And also in the space, you were talking, like, going way back to the beginning when you said you saw the show and the gentleman sitting close to you who was, like, having his own experience and, like, making it a second show for you. What people don't realize is that in our space, we can see a good portion of the audience. Mm. Just the nature of the lighting and being in a thrust space, you're all very close to us and we can see you. Mm. So when people are reacting like that, we feed off of that and that really keeps us going.
Cool.
And, like, having friends come to the show helps.
Yeah.
For sure.
You have a lot that come?
Yeah, which is great. I actually have some friends coming this Thursday. Really? Yeah, I would say at least once a week someone is there that I know.
Oh, that's great.
That's really special.
That helps, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, yes, we are on Broadway, and yes, we're doing what we've always wanted to do, and like, I can't say that I've ever been happier, and it's still, you still catch yourself going like, okay, let's do this one more time. Let's change our shoes one more time. Let's do this rehearsal again. Like, let's do another put-in rehearsal. But then you take a step back and you're like, what else would you want to be doing? Or what else could you be doing? And then that gives you perspective and you jump right back in.
Yeah. Yeah, besides that. So, like, in fitness, you either say, you know, you wake up and you're like, oh, I don't want to do this again. I don't want to go to the gym. Or you're in the midst of it. Like, let's say you're in the midst of conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
So, for me, I'll focus on maybe a certain specific technical aspect of the movement I'm doing,
mm-hmm.
or I'll focus on my breathing, or I'll focus on anything other than what I'm doing because that'll help me get through it.
Yeah.
How do you, besides just like reminding yourself, hey, I'm on Broadway and this was my dream, what other things do you do to practice like getting you through those moments of, you know, difficulty?
If I just take a moment and like quiet my mind if something's stressing me out. I also tend to leave a lot of stuff at the door, like at the stage door, as funny as that is. You leave a lot of your difficulties as much as you can on the outside world, but you also have to keep in mind that everyone's human. And I think that I remind myself that the story that I'm implored with telling is so important, and that I find value in the story. And I find value in my contribution to it and to the art itself. If I just kind of sit in silence for a second, that sometimes like helps all the little critters calm down for a second. That one really works for me.
Cool.
Yeah.
On About the Artist.
Yeah.
You have some nice credits at regional houses as well.
Sure.
Uh-huh. Maybe it was just the way it was listed, but maybe this is true. From 2010 to 2013, it seems like things were happening. And
Busy.
Then it seemed like your credits kind of skipped to 2017.
Yeah.
What happened in that gap there?
So from 2000, let's see, I graduated college. I worked at the Utah Shakespeare Festival for multiple seasons and kind of worked my way up from being a member of the Green Show to lead roles in their shows there, which was amazing. And like, truly, if anyone is listening who is near Utah, go to the Utah Shakespeare Festival. It is the most miraculous place on this earth. I learned a lot there. I was actually talking to some people last night, and that was kind of like grad school for me, I guess. It was like how I learned to be a professional, just in the opportunities there. And they only have like a summer and fall season. So in the wintertime, I did a non-equity tour one year. And then I also worked in Chicago at the Marriott Lincolnshire, which was lots of fun and amazing. And I love Chicago very, very much. And then, I kind of didn't drift away from theater. I just wasn't getting jobs. I would get jobs sporadically. I worked in Texas for a little while. And then because things weren't that great and I auditioned and got a job on a cruise ship. And so I was part of an inaugural company for a cruise ship, and we went all over the Mediterranean. My contract was 9 months. that's a really long time.
Yeah, to be out at sea.
But the Mediterranean's awesome.
Yeah, right.
So if you get a chance to go there, go. That was a long time, and it gave me time to grow up a little bit more. And the fortunate part of being on that cruise ship was I had my own cabaret, which also gave me more opportunities as a performer that I hadn't been having for a little while.
You got to choose your own set?
I got to choose my own set.
Wow, okay, sweet.
And then they orchestrated it for me.
Oh, hey.
It was insane. Yeah. It was beautiful, and it was a really, really great experience in just learning about myself and learning who I am in this world, this professional world and this actual global world. To see the world outside of the United States for the first time was super important. And then when I got back from that is when I got to hang out with Murph, the puppy, for a little while. And then I moved to Chicago.
Before you do that.
Yeah.
Before you go to Chicago.
Before I go to Chicago.
I know what happens next there.
Dun, dun, dun.
Go into it a little bit more, because the reason I bring it up is there's definitely inspiration to be had as far as someone telling a story of when they weren't on Broadway,
when they were a really good babysitter here in New York City.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What kept you going, or are there any memories when you were like, for me, I call them like the fruition moments. Like, you're on stage, let's say, you were in War Paint and mm-hmm. you're making your debut, mm-hmm. or you're in the midst of a great moment, My Fair Lady, and it all comes to fruition where you can remember a time, maybe in that gap from mm-hmm. 13 to 17, 2013, mm-hmm. 17, where it's like, this is why I did it, or that moment when I went through this, mm-hmm. it had a purpose for going through it.
Yeah, I think for me, and it's kind of been the story of my life, I guess, personally and professionally, it's like it takes a while for things to happen, and it doesn't.
Say that again.
It takes a while for things to happen.
Everyone needs it. Career, fitness, life.
Everything in life, and it doesn't mean that you're doing anything wrong, and it doesn't mean that you're making the wrong decisions or that anyone has wronged you. It is no one else's fault. Like, I think taking responsibility for yourself is maybe one of the most important things you can do, especially as a young performer, as a young person, as a human being. I have moments now when I'm allowed to sleep for 9 hours at night and have the good fortune to wake up in the morning and go, I get to do exactly what I love to do today and tomorrow and the next day. And there were times when in those few years that I was just like, okay, I'm here because I know I want to do this thing. And if I keep doing what I'm doing, I think I'm going to get closer to this thing that I want. And I just kept plowing through. And does that mean that I went to an audition every single day or three a day? No. There were times when I would wake up and be like, you know what, I really can't today. Whether it was because I was exhausted or overwhelmed or too busy trying to make money to survive, there were those days. And now I'm just, I would say it probably happens weekly that I like sit in my dressing room and I'm like staring at these pictures from years ago that are decorating my stage, and I'm just like, wow. Mm-hmm. You're doing it. Mm-hmm. And like, that girl got you to this place. Mm-hmm. So it's okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. So we'll get to Chicago. That girl. Yeah. So you said
that girl.
So in that the girl. Show, My Fair Lady,
yeah,
we kind of touched on it. Eliza, she stays true to herself.
Yes.
As she is transforming.
Yeah.
So she takes on this huge transformation. And then at the end, it's almost like for a moment she reverts back to like who she was because she was so just disgusted with how it was seemingly portrayed as to her value to the other two men in the show.
Yeah.
And once they were into an understanding of what the truth actually was, mm-hmm. then she holds true to that transformation. But mm-hmm. what was inside never left. No. So you looking at those pictures of yourself from the past and who you are today, what parts of you from, let's say, Zanesville, Ohio, what parts of you from your past in the Mediterranean have held on that make you who you are today?
I would say I have a crazy work ethic. I think for some people it probably is a little overwhelming, but for me, if I'm given an opportunity, I will take full advantage of it, and I will show up prepared, and I will ask questions, and I will give it everything I've got. And that has been a part of me since I was a child. I used to think it was so important to be perfect, and I confused being perfect with doing my best. And so I've kind of flipped the script on that and realized that doing my best is far more important. Perfect is impossible. Perfect is a perception, and I feel like it's got such negative connotation to it nowadays that it is so important to just focus on who I am and showing up and being the best version of myself that I can be in that time period. I think I've always had a group of people, friends and family, who've been so supportive of me the entire time, whether it was the days in which I was feeling very victorious or the days that I didn't want to get out of bed. I still had fabulous cheerleaders, and I think that is so important. Whether they're your family or your chosen family, no matter what you choose to do, especially in this business, it's important to have people who believe in you and who trust you and will remind you of who you are. That has not changed for me at all. Mm-hmm. The people who celebrate my victories are the same people who buy me ice cream cones when I'm just feeling really crappy. Mm-hmm. That's super important. I think I've lessened my anxiety, which I think is very important.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an easy culture we live in to carry anxiety.
Yeah, and there's no need for that. And one of the big, I definitely started reading the author Brené Brown. If y'all don't know who she is, I highly encourage you to, especially the book Daring Greatly. And it's based off of a Teddy Roosevelt quote about getting in the arena. And if you are fighting blood, sweat, and tears in the arena, then you have no time or any desire or any need to listen to the people who are just yelling from the stands. If they're not in the arena fighting with you, their opinion of you is none of your business. And in order to dare greatly, you have to try. And I think I've always been a person who tries and will try my best, and that hasn't changed. But my perception of what my best can be versus perfection has definitely changed.
Cool.
Yeah.
So you went around, you ended up on the ship, and then we'll go back to you end up in Chicago.
End up in Chicago.
And how do the kind of the stars align to bring you to where you are today?
Yeah. I went to a dance call at for War Paint, which was going to be at the Goodman Theater that summer, and it was the first audition I went to when I moved to Chicago. I believe it was January 17th. That day just rings true to me. And it was an ECC dance call, which is an equity course call. You just have to be a member of equity, or sometimes they see non-equity after they see the equity. And there were quite a few females there for the show, and I walk in the room, and Chris Gattelli, who was choreographing it, was there. He didn't have an assistant. He taught the whole combination. Scott Frankel, who composed the music, was there. And Larry Yerman, who ended up being the music director. They were all there, plus staff from the Goodman. And we did this combination that was wild and crazy. And I loved every moment of it, and how he was, how Chris was talking about the whole persona of the Arden girls, and then when they turn into the kind of the Revlon models of sorts, Which, if you haven't seen War Paint, you can listen to it and read the book. So we did this combination, and I was like, you know, I did my best. I don't know if that's what they were looking for, but I did my best. And they kept a few of us to sing, and I came in and I sang, and then I left that day and got a call almost immediately from casting saying, hey, they love you. We're going to have you come back and read all these sides and sing again. And it's going to be in a couple weeks, and it's going to be for the creative team from New York. And I was like, okay, cool. And so I got to go in again, and I did the sides and everything. And the director, Michael Greif, was there. And that for me was so overwhelming because I had sides for multiple characters, and they were all different ages, and one of them even had a British dialect, and I was like, what am I doing? This is the first time I've ever had to do this, since college at least. And but I felt good about it, and I did my research and knew who the women of that time period were, and so I just tried to portray that as best I could. And then I got a call a few weeks later, and they said, hey, they really love you, but we need you to come to New York because the producer needs to see you. I was like, okay, great. And they were like, well, we don't have all the details yet, but we'll work it out. And I flew into New York and went to Telsey, and David Stone was there, and I got to do the sides and everything for him. And then I flew back to Chicago that night, and it was like, I don't know what's going to happen. And I went back out on a ship briefly, just as a replacement for a short period of time, and found out when I was in Bermuda, I think, yeah, that I got the job, and I was ecstatic, but I also had asked them to have a day off to go to my brother's wedding, and they couldn't guarantee it. And so I called my brother in tears, and he said, you know, this is so important. He's like, you have to do this. Like, you can FaceTime into my wedding. Like, this is so important for you. And I was just like, okay, all right, I'll do it. And so I did it that summer. We had rehearsals in New York, and then we all went back to Chicago, but I got to go to my comfy apartment, which was great. So I was like actually living there and working there, and I was the dance captain in the swing. I never performed when we were in Chicago, and they announced while we were there that it would be moving to Broadway. And I was told then after we closed, they were like, hey, we love you, but we can't guarantee that we're bringing you with us because we have to get the actual cast done before we get the swings. And so I was like, okay, all right. And then I found out in September that I was going to be on Broadway. And so I packed up my Chicago apartment, went home to be home for Thanksgiving and Christmas, and then came here and did War Paint. And I debuted Easter of 2017 was my Broadway debut. I got to go on, and it was amazing. It was amazing.
Last question.
Yeah.
So you're in Chicago, you go through this long process for the audition.
Totally.
And they want you to go to New York to audition for the producers.
Yeah.
You go to the very well-known Telsey casting agency. How do you go through that whole Chicago process? How do you prepare for your audition in New York? How do you get on that plane, get off the plane, walk into the building, into the room, and with all that on the line, how do you perform well enough or to your capability to book to book like you did?
Well, when I got off the plane, I had told one of my friends that I was coming to town, and he said that he had a minute that he could meet me at Starbucks around the corner from Telsey, where it was previously located. And literally, I hugged him for like 10 minutes nonstop. His name's Hayden. He's a dear sweetheart. And he was like, you can do this. I know you can do this. This is so you. Like, this, the roles are you. Like, the time period is you. The style is you. They want you. They do. They do. And I was like, I know. I think I know that. I think I know that. Yeah. Yeah, it is me. And, like, I was so prepared. And I, like, memorized the sides over and over and over again. And I knew who I was. And I knew at that point in time, if they wanted me bad enough that they wanted me to come here to audition and then would fly me back home, that obviously somebody liked me. Somebody liked me. And if they liked me, then I better like myself. So I just was like, you know what? I can do this. And even though I was like shaky and nervous, I just was breathing. I was like, I can do this. I can absolutely do this. And I want to do this. And I want to do it with these people. And I walked into the room and I did it, and I kind of made some people laugh, so that felt kind of good. And like the reader couldn't find his pages, and I made a joke about it, and it was great though because it totally broke the ice.
You got one job.
But
it's an important job.
And he found it, but he just couldn't find it. It wasn't in order. But I remember making a joke about that, and I kind of made it in character as one of the characters, and people laughed, and I was like, you know what? People laughing is never a bad thing.
Right.
It's never a bad thing. Yeah. So, yeah.
That's important to remember. Ooh. We always tend to forget that. When you walk into the room, no matter how grumpy they look or how exhausted or how over they are behind the table, they want you to be good.
They want you to be good. They want
they
you
want
to
you
be good.
To walk in.
Desperately.
And they, no,
yes.
No matter how much it seems like they're not cheering for you.
They are.
They want you to knock it out.
Yes.
Because sometimes you have that.
They have to find somebody.
And why not you?
Why not?
Why not?
They would love for that, like for all their questions to be answered when you walk in the room.
Mm-hmm.
So if you present yourself in a way that says like, hey, I'm here, I am perfect for this, and it's just because I'm me and I happen to have this skill set, hire me. Like, that's what we're here to do.
There you go.
Yeah.
That is what we're here to do.
Right?
Well, Barbara Jo, thanks for being on the podcast.
Oh, my pleasure. Truly.
It was great chatting with
good
you.
Good times, yeah.
And yeah. Guys, check her out. You can find her on the mentioned platforms in the beginning of the podcast, as well as coming up. I'll refresh your memory in just a second. So thanks again, Barbara Jo.
For sure.
Thanks again for tuning in. Until next time. Later. And that'll do it with Barbara Jo Benardzik. Thanks again for tuning in. Once again, you can follow her on Instagram at Barbara_Jo. Or you can Google her, see what she's been up to and what she has going on in the future. Barbara Jo Benardzik, BedNarczuk. Once again, it's me, Roscoe, signing off here. If you like the podcast, please subscribe, rate us, follow us on Instagram at Built for the Stage. Check us out on the website, www.builtforthestage.com. Thanks.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.